Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to the Star Chamber Show live podcast. And this is Stephen Zimmer coming to you live out of Central Kentucky. Joining me also in the great state of Kentucky tonight is R.G. Westerman and the one, the only, from parts unknown in Tennessee, Daniel Dark. Welcome, my friends. Tonight's the big night.
Hello. Hello. I'm excited.
Hello.
It is a night of weirdness.
Yes.
Yay.
Yes. Keyword weird, and that's why Daniel's been just looking forward to this episode 241, so he can bring the weird up a notch, as it were. But
that's not weird. He's just in the wrong century.
he's fantastic, and he's definitely familiar with our guest tonight as. I think most regular listeners of the show are so. Well, I think those of you that follow the show know who's come up tonight. But for those who are joining tonight for the first time, we're going to do our usual and wait and surprise you around 9:15 with our guest. But it is going to be a very fun night. This will be a lot of fun. But yeah, so how is it going? Yeah, we were talking about for right prior to the show in our chatting, we were talking about cat stories and all kinds of things. So what's coming up? Because next week is, of course, Thanksgiving week, and I don't know in this year how many of us are traveling. But how's things looking for y'all?
Well, we're probably going to go next door and have turkey with my parents because we're basically all in the same bubble now. So, but that's the extent of our travel this year.
Yeah, well, that's not far. Definitely be a very safe and smooth trip at least.
Yeah, yeah. But at least there will be turkey. That's a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And Daniel, are you traveling this year or are you going to be staying home?
I'll be staying at home this year. It's just one, you know, my mom's place is still shut down. I'm having a lot of guests and everything there.
Mm-hmm.
I went down there the other day and took her around to do her errands and stuff. You know, that whole complex is still pretty much shut down where they don't want anybody that doesn't live there in there. So.
Oh, wow.
Well, definitely have a fun one, though.
When COVID first started, there was a place like hers in Gallatin that had so many cases and everything, and several people died because, you know, their age and stuff like that.
Oh, goodness.
From it, so. You know, I understand what, you know, that they're trying to protect the people that live there and people that work there and everything, but it's, you know, it makes it hard on them when, you know, they're basically in their rooms, you know, their apartments and everything, not really allowed to do a whole lot. They may go down to the dining room once a week now.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that is hard.
Well, on a good note, we do have some active chat room participants already. We've got the immortal Tommy B. Smith. Looks like we have Clayton Barnett back in the chat room tonight. We got Sandy Lender, and a good night for Sandy to be checking in because had ties to our sponsors tonight. And yeah, looks like they're having a early conversation about plumbing and electricity. So yes, the topic range is broad on the Star Chamber Show. We cover everything evidently. So
yeah. When in doubt, check the chat room.
This is awesome. Yeah, it's a funny chat going on here. They're definitely talking about plumbing and electricity, and I think Tommy's drinking a dark beverage, as he says. So yeah, Tommy's having some fun.
Now, did you bring enough for the class, Tommy?
Yes. Yeah, bring enough for everybody.
I drink dark red beverages a lot of times, so understand.
Oh, well, I got my beverage of choice for the show, my traditional tumbler of bourbon for sitting and chatting with you all tonight. You know, it gives me that kind of conversational, relaxed vibe so I can, you know, just lay back, enjoy my friends here on the show. I've got, so yeah,
that's
I'm enjoying
awesome.
It.
I'm actually sitting in the driveway in my car because, you know.
Whoa. Wow.
Small that, house podcast.
Yeah. Well, I hope it's not getting too cold because it's a little
warmer than my tumbler right now. I feel for you.
Cranked it up. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't crank this one up yet because it doesn't have it. I'm looking at the air conditioning heating unit laying on the floor right now. So.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. Boy.
Oh, wow.
Well, let's hope it doesn't get too chilly.
Yeah. I cranked up the car for about half an hour before I called in. So
nice, good. Yeah, because I was out for just a brief bit late afternoon, and it was getting a little chilly. I didn't wear a light jacket, so yeah, the cold weather's definitely rolling in. It's been a busy week on my end. I've been doing a lot of editing work. I want to give a shout out to Kathy Jackson. She's got some amazing stuff coming out. And I'm not at liberty to, I guess, talk about the titles maybe in the exact books because, you know, I just make sure that that's cleared by the author before I talk publicly about it. You know, I don't know what they have or have not announced sometimes, but I will say that, yeah, there's a Kathy Jackson project that is absolutely fabulous, that two of them, in fact, that are coming right down the pike, and I got to hand off to her manuscript-wise, editing-wise, some good stuff. So keep an eye out for Kathy Jackson releases and release announcements very shortly. And I did. Oh, yeah, RG, you're going to be very, very pleased to hear this. I finished my final copy pass on a new short story collection yesterday. Looking at you, Tommy B. Smith. Yeah, because Tommy B. Smith actually was the guy that kind of gave me a little nudge to go ahead and do a Hellscapes 3. He was like, yeah, it's kind of time for you to do a third volume, Steve. And yeah, because I had some story ideas percolating and graphed out and things like that, but I hadn't written a third volume yet. And so it is done. And so, yes, I have five projects, manuscripts done that are brand new that have not been released, and I barely even talked about any of them. So I got the stack of manuscripts.
I mean, you are just a machine.
Well, if you want a machine, you got to talk to Sandy Lender and Kathy, because God, they're even ahead of me on the amount of material they have this year. But I am glad that I have gotten a few things ready for the pipeline, and all five of them are now you know, off for editing, and it's just gonna take time to get through that process. But yeah, there are five new projects. Yeah, so that's kind of cool.
That's awesome. Well, on that note, I actually finally turned a corner on this sequel. Like, there, I was stuck, and I took the day on Sunday and just wrote all day, and then that kind of got me unstuck, and so now I know, like, the end is in sight, so I'm excited.
Very nice. Congratulations.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Thanks.
Yeah, because I'm looking forward to that one. Yeah. And I know that you've been eager to see that hit stride.
It has been
awesome.
A bear. It has been an absolute bear. So yeah, it feels good to finally have some movement going on it.
That's awesome. And Daniel, any new reports on your end before we acknowledge sponsors? Do you have news on the trolley front or the writing front?
Well, the trolley front, got the graphics done on the outside yesterday, built out a couple of platforms and stuff, and got things set up in here a little bit, brought in a new cabinet and everything today. And have all but one of my chairs sitting in here right now, and the humidor should be shipping out in the next day or so if it hasn't already shipped out. So,
nice.
And AC and everything should be done sometime next week.
Very nice. Very nice.
That's cool.
Yeah,
now, you are bringing this thing to the next Imaginarium, right?
Don't know yet.
No pressure.
No. He'll just bring it right to you when you get book two done, RG. He'll just bring it up to you to be the centerpiece for your release party.
Okay. That I'm down for that.
mobile release party.
I mean,
it'll be awesome.
Yeah. It might be in the middle of a cornfield, but, you know, we'll do what we can.
Yeah.
Yeah, make sure the cornfield has good, you know, solid packed ground and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
I don't want to try to tow this thing out of the mud hole.
Well, yeah.
Yeah,
maybe
we
parking lot might be a better option then.
Yeah. That's awesome. All right. Getting
a bug stuck out in the middle of a field someplace probably is not the best thing to do.
No, not true.
When you just get launched. Not when you're just getting launched.
If I could convince the Amish teenagers to throw me a party, then we'd be set. Because, I mean, rural Kentucky, we got to have something. You know, I just get with the Amish and be like, yo, aren't y'all doing room springing this weekend?
Yeah.
They'd be like, yeah, come on down.
Well, Holly's probably known among the Amish community there. She's probably famous among the Amish world, so maybe she can come down and help you on that project.
I'm all for it. That would be amazing. But anyway, sponsors, yes.
Yes, sponsors. Two tonight, as always, and they are Sandy Lender is one of our sponsors tonight, and of course the amazing Renmelian. And Sandy is actually in the chat room tonight, so we could thank Sandy directly. And we do have Sandy's most recent spot, which I'm going to play for you all now. Here we go.
It's exciting to find new creatives, which is probably why you listen to the Star Chamber Show with its cool lineup each week. Now one of those creatives makes following her easy for you. Check out the Facebook page for fantasy author Sandy Lender and click on the pinned post to access her email form. She offers a free short story in exchange for your name and email so you can receive the world's most infrequent newsletter. That means no spam. All you have to do is click on the top post at fantasy author Sandy Lender. She's made it easy for you. Now back to learning about this week's cool creative in the Star Chamber.
Thank you, Sandy Lender. You're the best and really appreciate it. And definitely, folks, it's free to get on an email list. So, yes, follow the advice in the ad and get on Sandy's email list. And our second sponsor tonight, of course, is the multifaceted, multi-talented Renmelian. I just love saying her name. But here is her spot, and enjoy.
Have you hit a wall with your story and you're not sure where it's going anymore? Feeling uninspired? Need a book that doesn't look like it's self-published? Hire a muse with 33 years experience as an illustrator, writer, and designer. Hi, I'm Renmelian. You can find me everywhere online with a quick search, Renmelion. Thanks for tuning into the Star Chamber.
Thank you, Renmelian, and I hope that she is having computer nightmares like me, and I hope that she has resolved the ones on her end as well. So I just want to say that personally, because I know how it goes, Renmelian, if you're listening tonight. Yeah, I know how that's tech things go. But thank you so much for sponsoring the show always. And, we do have our guest on deck, so I'm just going to go ahead and bring our guest in. But before we bring tonight's guest aboard, I'm going to ask RG and Daniel a quick question, okay? And I want your honest answer. Are you weird enough for tonight's guest?
Yes,
are you
we
weird enough?
Are.
Fantastic. And on that note, Tonight's guest is an award-winning author who is a Star Chamber show favorite. He hails from the great state of Ohio, and among his works is the internationally acclaimed League of Elders series, out in all kinds of various formats, and even has an ebook in chapters available on YouTube. All kinds of fantastic artwork with all of his covers, and definitely one of the most visionary and creative artists and cool guys that you will meet on the circuit. And of course, I'm speaking of the one, the only, Onward, Ren Garcia. Welcome to the show, Ren. You're back.
Yay! I'm back. How are you, Steven?
Yes. You're welcome. Hello. It's good. It's good to hear you, man. And you did hear that we are weird enough for you. We say that all every time we have one of your spots on the show. We are weird enough, and we're ready. We're ready.
It's not possible. It's not possible, because if someone's getting weird enough, I amp it up a little bit more. You know, there's always another notch on the dial for the weirdness, and I fully embrace that.
There is infinite weirdness.
The world needs more weirdness, you know. So
it's true. I agree with that.
That's good to hear.
Yes, good. Well, and I want to congratulate you, Ren. You were looking new photo you posted. You're looking very dapper and svelte, and I believe you said that you've made some great physical progress with some. Are you doing like Navy SEAL training, or what's the word, my friend? You looked quite dapper in that photo from the other day.
Well, thank you. My wife told me I needed to shape up or ship out. So I decided to shape up, you know, lose a few pounds.
Like that.
Yeah. Lose a few pounds, get a little more energy. So I've been, I guess this is a unpaid promotion, but doing the Jenny Craig thing, which works.
Ooh.
I mean, why not? And then
awesome.
Since I don't dare go to a gym, I have a functional gym in my basement that I've acquired over I don't know how long, that had been collecting dust, but no longer. You know, slam the kettlebells, do a bunch of push-ups, my old jump rope, which I actually am now able to do, you know, without tripping, which is a major progress.
Fantastic.
I got a little rubber band, and I have a few gadgets that we bought from Bed Bath & Beyond. I don't really know if they do anything, but it's kind of comforting to do them anyways.
That's awesome. I thought you might have like a custom like swimming pool with seals or something that you swim with, you know, knowing you. I mean, something along those lines.
That's on the docket for next year. The pool with the seals and the little mountain shale, you know, so I can get in there and commune with my people. So it's next year.
Fantastic, man. Oh man, it's good to hear you, because this unfortunately we haven't gotten to see you this year. You're one of the most interesting people in the room, no matter what the convention is or book fair or book event. I mean, definitely always a blast to visit your table or display, and you always have an interesting one. So how has it gone this year without being able to do too much in the live end? Because I know that's something you really enjoy doing.
Well, it's been kind of a grind. You know, there's days I'm like, I really miss doing shows. I'm all pumped. I'm ready to go. But then there's other days I'm like, I'm good. I'm just going to sit in my basement and work on my biceps, you know.
Nice.
Same.
You know, this crazy coof has just made, I guess, a new normal where everyone's just hiding out. And I heard here in Ohio, they were going to enforce a mask rule in your own house. And how you enforce that, I don't know. I guess it's the honor system.
Like when you have people over or just when you're like hanging out by yourself? Like, how does that work?
When you're, well, I don't know. I haven't heard any specifics, but as far as I, from what I read, it was just if you're hanging out by yourself in your pajamas, you better have your mask on or else.
No. No.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
I don't believe it.
There's just this disease, all kinds of craziness has been going on. And Amazon is not immune to the coof. Because I don't know what happened, but my book one, League of Elder book one, somehow, some way, Amazon switched it to $0. 0.00. And
like free.
It's not a KDP. Free. Oh, yeah, free. Free.
Yeah.
And it's not a KDP select. You know, it's usually not possible to do that if, unless you're enrolled in KDP select. But someone somewhere at, in their home, in their pajamas, made it zero. And since then, I have moved thousands of book ones.
Well, of
course. Not getting paid. And before, it was the crushing, backbreaking price of 99 cents.
Oh.
So, you're like,
wow.
You know,
you enjoy
wow.
your ivory tower there?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, what? You know, what's the difference between 99 cents and zero? I guess 99 cents. But
well, for you,
well,
it's
do you have it free on any other site? Let me ask you real quick, Ren. Did you put it for free on any other site? Because Amazon has this automatic price match kind of software. And so it's a way to kind of trigger Amazon to offer your book for free, like put it on like Kobo for free, and Amazon will put it for free. It's kind of like a backdoor for putting stuff up on Amazon for free without being in like KDP. And so do you have it on another site anywhere where it's been offered kind of for free or kind of like evergreen or whatever they call it?
I'm not from – I don't think so. The only thing I can think of is –
That's the only thing I can think of.
Really old copy.
Is it your hard copy or is it your digital?
It's the e-book. No, I
don't know. Yeah,
it
better be.
I was going to say, you didn't buy them out?
yeah.
I mean, I have a really old copy of it on – But that's it.
Yeah, Amazon moved his print book to zero, and thousands of them moved, and then they sent me a bill. Yeah, that would be terrible. It wouldn't surprise me, but that would be terrible. Yeah, I'm thinking, same thing, Sandy. Sandy also mentioned what I said, that she did the perma-free thing where if it's free somewhere else, it'll actually trigger Amazon to offer it for free. So, I don't know if everyone knows that, but that is something you can do if you want. But that's that's what I was wondering, Brand.
The indie market.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering if that was the possible reason why that happened, because otherwise, they owe you something for that, because that's not too cool. Not cool.
You know, I don't mind, if people dive into the first book, just maybe they might want to read the second one. I have had extra sales and other books, so that could be the case.
Right. Yeah, because you've also got your awesome audiobook on YouTube with various chapters. We've talked about that not just the last time you're on the show, but we've mentioned that many times on some of the shows that, you've supported. But it's that YouTube presentation that you have is fantastic. And I'm hoping that you've seen that bear some fruit as far as finding you some new readers. Have you gotten some feedback on your YouTube channel?
I have. A lot of different channels or a lot of different chapters out there, and some of them have done really well, like at the beginning of the books. I had Carol Phillips, who's my cover artist, as a guest reader. She was reading the main bad guy, Queen Gome. So I sent her lines to read, and when I got them back,
I was like, oh, my God, Carol. Whoa, that's scary. That's actually pretty impressive. Like, oh, you know, dial it up a little bit, Carol.
That's awesome.
Well, that's actually one of the things that's kind of unique and cool about you is you do have a long time professional working relationship with a cover artist who's extensively developed, you know, art from your world and definitely knows your work. And it's a kind of a unique thing. You don't see that all the time with authors, but I think your long-term collaboration with Carol is one of the cooler things that about your world that I love watching all the new posts and new art that comes out that you two develop together.
Yeah, Carol, we've been working together for, 10 years now, I think?
Yeah, at least. Yeah.
Every so often she'll read my mind and she'll send me something back that was totally what I had in my head. You know, that's pretty cool. And then when you're on that same wavelength and you're on the same train together, every so often she's way off in left field and I'm like, what's this? But that's not too often. And every so often she'll send me a picture. She goes, you know, I had some time and I thought I'd paint this up. That $500. Let's go. Okay. There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, please, folks, check out his covers. I mean, yeah, some of that artwork is just mind-blowing, and I know that, you know, you've been thrilled with how accurate it is with portraying your work, which is always gold for an author. But it's definitely one of the strong aspects of your presentation. Is that artwork and yeah, Carol Phillips is the artist and yeah, check that work out because it is awesome. Yeah, I love it. I'm glad you post it often too. It's fun to see.
When working with an artist, it's key to keep the artist interested. If you have one that's just collecting a paycheck, you kind of get uninspired results. So usually, when it's time for a new cover, I'll send her 3 or 4 different scenes, and she'll actually pick the one that she wants to do. And she goes, let's do this. I'm like, okay, let's do this one. And then she always throws in a nixie, you know, something that's not necessarily in the book, but makes for more drama on the cover. So it's nothing big, but it's like, okay, well, this wasn't necessarily how it was in the book, but that's fine. You know, you still get the
right
message, and it makes for a cooler picture. And sometimes I'll go back and rewrite a scene like, oh, she put this in here, so let me go add that. Okay, all right, here we go. Now it is canon.
That's cool.
Awesome. And you've got a question out of the chat room, actually. I got some folks Googling your titles already there. And I also wanted to say hi to Carol Preflatus, who is hanging out with us tonight also in the chat room.
Oh.
But this comes from Clayton. And evidently, Ren, you are collectible, my friend. Your works command a premium on the market, and we're going to prove that in a minute. And so, yes, buy Ren Garcia books. They are evidently a great investment if you want to make money in this shaky economy, because he wants to know, Ren, why is Athas Tea Party Volume 1 in paperback $930 on Amazon right now? He wanted to know, is it really that good? $930.
Well, the answer to that question is no. What happened is I was never happy with the initial binding of Athas Tea Party, the first children's book we came up with. It was too big. The artwork was kind of like out of focus because the book itself was so large. I didn't like the colors. You know, when you see them on the screen, they look one way, but then sometimes when you get it back from the printer, it looks another.
Oh yeah. Oh
yeah. Yeah. Didn't like all the bleed, and I didn't really like much of that binding. So with Tony Acree, hi Tony, if you're listening.
Tony Hydra.
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 El Hydra.
We decided to redo Apis Tea Party and make it smaller, make a margin, get the text off the artwork and into a, you know, into, you know, down to the bottom of the page or wherever it fits so it doesn't contaminate the art. Make it smaller so the art's not as big and out of focus. And so that's where we are. And the COOF has messed things up. It's still pending because they Amazon mm-hmm. keeps saying that the margins aren't right. But like, well, the margins look right to me, but you know, what do I know? So that's probably why that initial binding has that weird price, because it's obsolete and going to be out of print at some point once we get the second binding going. That's the only thing I can think of.
So check your garages, folks, your attics, and if you, in fact, bought a few boxes of that particular version, you may be a millionaire and not even know it right now. So.
You can sell them for $930.
Yeah. Each. Yes. That's even almost as good as if you bought Amazon stock in around the end of the 90s, beginning of 2000s.
Yep.
Yeah, it's almost the same level of investment. They might be talking about you on all the financial shows pretty shortly there. $930 bucks a copy, man. That's a hell of an investment.
Even at that price, I'd probably still only get like 75 cents a book.
Oh, yeah, well, right? That's the indie author curse. Yeah, that's the indie author curse. That's so true. Yeah, Amazon will take their 98% cut and then charge you a delivery fee and then give you 5
yep.
cents at the end of it. but
I mean,
that is cool. That is cool.
That'd be
thank
like
you, Clayton.
A PS5 for $32,000. You know that. You know
yeah.
they're scalping right now out there. Like, don't pay $32,000 for your PS5. Wait 2 months and you'll get it for retail price or less.
Yeah, wait for the League of Elder PS5 edition. That's, you know, wrapped with League of Elder graphics.
That would be amazing.
That would burn up a PS5. It would go thermal on you in a moment, you know, with all the processing that would have to happen.
But judging by your paperback prices, that one might be $50,000 on the price tag, so it might be a premium buy. But it would be cool. I have to admit, yeah, someday there needs to be a video game from your world. Yeah, definitely has to. So developers, if you're listening, trust me, a video game from his League of Elders series, that world, that the universe is there, that would be awesome. People would play it endlessly, I promise you.
I'm ready. I'm ready to go.
And
let's do it.
Yeah, because I don't think RG was on the last time you were on, and I think it was the last time you were on. You were describing that colossal. You know how in feature films, the science fiction film They Live. It's a great film with Roddy Piper back from the day of John Carpenter, but it has the longest fight scene ever in commercial mainstream feature film history. It does.
Oh,
and,
really?
Yeah, when Roddy's trying to get the other guy to put the glasses on. And they have this long brawl to force them to put the glasses on. Ren actually probably has the distinction of having the longest fight scene to ever appear in literature. So, yeah, because you have it is incredible, man. You have this like a 20-page fight scene. It's fantastic.
Nice. That's awesome.
It's a 34-page fight scene, and that's
30.
A bridge.
There you go.
From 40 pages.
It's a bridge.
It's a bridge. And you know why it's there? You want to know why this colossal, draining fight scene is in that book? It's to protest NaNoWriMo.
Ah, the truth comes out.
2 weeks after our NaNoWriMo special, here it is.
that's a trade secret. The whole if you need to chew up some word count, just put in a fight scene. That's
big fight scene. that whole book, the whole House of Bloodstein book, started off as a NaNoWriMo project, and I've never been blocked, you know, in my years of writing. Never really had a writer's block, but doing the NaNoWriMo really threw me off my game, because my emphasis isn't really daily word count. It's more getting a certain thought on the page, you know, and however many words that takes, you know, a few or a lot. But having to meet a word count goal really threw me off my game and messed me up. And after a while, I started to rebel. I'm like, I'm going to rebel against the system, and I'm going to just have a damn dragon that's going to last 40 pages. There's your 50,000 words. right there.
That is awesome. Oh, my God, that is so awesome. Yeah, so They Live in Film, Ren Garcia in Literature. Those
I
folks, those are the record fight scenes, and
that came on
one
the heel. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
that came on the heels of my over the top fight scene in the Temple of the Exploding Head book that has almost 500,000 participants in this fight. I
wow.
did that. So when I was in college, me and my friends, we're gonna go into nerd territory here, so bear with me. Me and my friends played a lot of D&D. We played TMNT. We played Champions. You name it, we played it. And Champions, if you're not familiar with that, it's the hero system with superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
And we all had and I still have them, reams and reams of heroes that we had made for this game. And every so often, on a Friday evening after we got home from school, we'd order up a few pizzas, and we'd have an over-the-top. We'd all take our Champions characters, which numbered in the hundreds, and we'd have a single elimination tournament. You know, you stick them in a hopper, you pull out two, and then they fight. And this would go on all weekend, basically, all day, all night. We'd start Friday evening, usually end Sunday morning. I mean, you can't get more nerdalicious than that. But God help me, I loved it. I'm like,
Ren, I'm an old school LARPer myself, so you're in good company.
Oh, that's
nice.
Yeah.
See, LARPing is awesome, but when you're just sitting at a table throwing dice.
there was plenty. That's the lead up to the LARPing. Like, everyone's sitting around the table and we're like, this is fun. We should do it, like, outside.
Well, we did that. Also, eventually we took it to the sewers, but I'm like,
nice.
Oh, this sewer is nasty. I'm not going in that sewer. I'm not gonna do it. So, but so we would have these over the top tournaments, and I just loved them so much. I threw it into one of my books where you have the good guy Caragol and the bad guy, the Horned God. And they're in the Temple of the Exploding Head, which is like a mile long,
yes.
a mile high. My dimensions are just out of this world. I just go crazy with it. It's 20 million feet tall. You know, I just I just do
That's
things
fantastic.
Like that. And so Tara Hill would pick up, you know, he would like poof, there'd be an army that he picked, and then the Horned God would pick his army, and eventually he had about 500,000 people roaming around in this temple, and then they just have a huge battle. Now, one of my literary compachos was Michael Moorcock, you know, the Elric series,
yes.
Eternal Champion.
Oh, God, yeah, absolutely.
He was so good at having really big battles, but keeping track of all the little pieces. You know,
mm-hmm.
sometimes you get, you know, like if you had like a Civil War situation, you have the Union Army on one side and the Confederates on the other. You know, that's not the way armies work. You have the individual regiments, you have the specialties like the Burden sharpshooters and the Zouaves, mm-hmm. and you have all these little pieces. And Michael Moorcock was really good at keeping track of all these little things that are happening on a big battle. So that's what I tried to do with this massive fight in the Temple of the Exploding Head, was keep track of all the little various, you know, players in this thing. And I think it worked out pretty well. It's not as big as the nano fight in the House of Bloodstain.
Yeah.
But it's still fun.
Yeah, 34-page fight scene. Yeah, that's fantastic.
That's
oh,
awesome.
My God. But I just love that. Yeah, I just love that whole thing. Temple of the Exploding Head. I mean, that's just that's genius alone. That's brilliant.
My wife was like, "Is that really what you're going to call it?" I said, "Yes."
Yes, dear.
Don't shy away
yeah,
from it. Be proud. You know, embrace it.
You don't forget it. Once you've encountered it, you don't forget it. That's for sure. So yeah, there is something to that that madness of yours. And oh, man. But Mr. Dark, I know you're probably sitting in the background wondering if Rand is going to release League of Elder top hats. Something like that. I know you've got something on your mind tonight. I mean, this is Ren. I mean, he is here among us tonight.
Oh, yeah. Ren is one of the favorites of this show and everything, and we love everything that he does. But my question for you, Ren, is when will we see something unweird from you?
Unweird.
Unweird. I'm glad you asked. I released my memoir a couple years back. It deals with my military experience. You know, I was in the Air Force back in the early 90s. That's mm-hmm. not weird necessarily. You know, it just me talking about it's incredibly thin book. If you look at my books, are fairly spiny, they're pretty thick, except for my memoirs, which is like a little pamphlet in comparison. But that's not really weird. There's really nothing, and I can't help but jazz things up a little bit. So, you know, I jazz up my own exploits a little, but not too much. It deals with my time at Chanute Air Force Base, which is in Illinois. And I went there to learn how to work on jet engines. And right after I left, they closed Chanute, and it became like almost like Silent Hill. It became like a ruin. If you would go there, you'd see all these neglected buildings, crumbling streets, trees that look like they're right out of a horror movie. You name it. It was a jarring experience. I had, about 10 years after I graduated, I went back just to see it, and just seeing it in that state really broke my heart, because I really enjoyed my time at Chanute, but it also intrigued me. I'm like, look at this place, look at these walls that, you know, used to teach so many airmen as they passed through, and now it's just full of ghosts. And I felt compelled to put that on, you know, put that into book form. And of all my books that I've written, that's my mother's favorite. I'm also working on a semi-autobiographical, but still a little whacked out story about my family and the various sordid history of my family. You know, we come from deep South Texas, even though I grew up in Ohio, but my family is from South Texas. Mm-hmm. And there's all kinds of interesting stories that I would hear my mom speaking to my grandmother with. Now, they tended to speak in Spanish a lot, and I could only pick up little bits here and there, but lots of cool stuff that I would hear. You know, they suspected my uncle brought back a wife from Vietnam and had her hidden someplace. And I don't know if that was just a story, or if that actually happened. But I'm like, you know, I'm going to make this happen. that sounds cool. So I've been working on that. It's called Wargo, Texas, which is a made-up place in Duval County, which is a real place. But I've been working on that a little bit.
You can do a lot with Texas. My family hails from Texas. I never lived there, but I, you know, went there during the summer to visit my grandparents. And you can definitely do a lot with Texas. That sounds really cool.
Yeah, there's all kinds of story. And where we come from, I'm not sure where in Texas you're from. We're from the deep South, and you know, the South Coastal Bend near Corpus Christi, not too far from the Mexican border. And it's kind of an estuary. It's an estuary where American and Mexican culture kind of blends together.
Yeah.
And you hear all kinds of strange. It's kind of a free for all because.
Yeah. Anna Nicole Smith is from that area, isn't she?
I don't. She might be. That's possible.
She's from a little town called Mejia. It's spelled M-E-S-I-A. But anyway, sorry, I go off on tangents.
Yeah, this is San Diego, Texas, and, you know,
right.
A tiny town. And, you know, when 60 Minutes rolls up and does a hit piece on the town that your family grew up in, that strange things are going on, and that's exactly what happened. There was a political strongman who lived there back in the 70s. He's passed away now, but 60 Minutes did a whole thing on him.
Wow.
That's awesome, Brent.
Cool. And then there was the thing with the treasure chest. My cousins, everybody's a cousin down there, no matter how distantly related. My cousins were digging a ditch in my other cousin's property, and they hit something wooden, and they dug it up and opened it, and lo and behold, it was a chest full of gold coins, you know, from the 1800s. From the 1800s.
Like a proper pirate's chest.
Like a pirate's chest, only this is...
That's awesome.
This was Pancho Villa money. Because it was around that same time, and he actually raided in that area at that time. So my cousins, not being too bright, they went to my other cousin and said, "Hey, we found this gold on your land. Can we have it?"
Oh, my gosh. Oh, no. Oh.
And no, because
that's
said,
how
no.
centuries-long family feuds start.
Right. My other cousin's like, No, I was planning on digging that treasure up next week. So hand it over. And it began a huge fight over this money. The two diggers who dug it up, the cousin who owned the land or was buried. Then an insurance company from, I'm not sure if they were Mexican or Americans, said, hey, we paid out an insurance claim on this money in 1862 or whatever. That money is ours. And then the descendants of Pancho Villa show up and say, we stole that money fair and square.
That's
ours.
Awesome.
Amazing.
It's
well, I want you to know, Ren, everybody in the chat room has Texas connections of one sort or another. And in fact, Tommy B. Smith was just talking to his friend down in Mesquite. And we have Clayton, who was born in Houston. And we have Carol Preflatish, who spent a lot of time in San Antonio. And then I, of course, went to school in Abilene, Texas at the wonderful Hardin-Simmons University. Shout out to all alums that may be listening. Loved my time at Hardin-Simmons. And, yeah, everybody here has got some Texas connections. This is fantastic. But, Ren, you didn't go back far enough, because if you remember the second 300 movie, you know, there was, the Greek and Persian wars, you know, where they had, Artemisia commanding, you know, the Persian fleet, of course. Mm-hmm. That's the untold story of your oldest ancestor from the Greek Isles, Rhenicus the Mighty, who was the true one that defeated Artemisia. Which is the untold story, which of course,
wow.
I unearthed after extensive research and many trips to Greece and informed Ren of this, you know, and she was very happy to hear.
Well, that escalated quickly.
He knows. I've joked with him about the Rhenicus the Mighty before, but yeah, I've always thought that story needs to be told.
Well, that old
some of your earliest ancestors from the time of Alexander the Great. But Tommy says he has not heard of this before. That's right, Tommy. Yeah, that's a new one. The Legend of Rhenicus. That's just wacky Steve with my weird things that I think of sometimes. But yeah, but I know you enjoy it, Ren. I know you do.
Well, they migrated from ancient Greece, moved west to Spain, and then got kicked off the continent during the Spanish Inquisition. And that's true. And then ended up in Mexico, you know, and then that's how it all started. Yeah, my parents did a familial background check on our family, and they found out that we're related to freaking Dracula.
Oh, that's nice. Holly will get to visit you tomorrow. Holly will be coming to visit you tomorrow. That's like her one of her heroes.
Sure. Well, it was like Vlad Tepes' cousin who's like in our family tree. I'm like, well, if he was Vlad Tepes' cousin and he's in my tree, then Vlad Tepes is one of my cousins, many times removed.
Yep.
I'll take it. I'll do it.
So, you may be some kind of distant count.
Well, it could be. I mean, it's not. It doesn't really mean anything in the modern context. It'd be nice.
Nonsense.
Yeah. We're also related to Catherine of Aragon, El Cid, some guy named the Antichrist. And I'm not sure who that guy is, but that sounds kind of
okay.
Sounds kind of crazy.
Yeah, that's pretty ominous. That's pretty ominous, but... But El Cid, who was in that movie? Was that, who starred in that? El Cid. Yeah, I always make, every
was
time
it
yeah,
Michael?
I hear of El
no.
Cid, I was, it's
Kirk
a classic
Douglas?
Era
no.
film. It's somebody on that kind of area, though. God,
yeah.
I can't think of it.
Yeah.
We'll do some quick research while we talk here. But, yeah, that's awesome, Ren. And I don't know, I think my mic actually cut out for a second there, but, I definitely love the Rhenicus stuff that I talked with you about. Yeah, we have to develop this ancient timeline of you, because that will explain everything about Temple Exploding Head, League of Elder, everything.
A great many things. I think El Cid was played by Charlton Heston.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you are right.
Yep.
God, I'm trying to just to confirm that, just to be absolutely sure we give accurate information.
Yeah.
That's what we do on the Star Chamber show. You are correct. Oh, wow. Sophia Loren is in that one, too.
Yep.
Who I love, love Sophia Loren's work. And, yeah, that was 1961. You know, it was from that great era with Ben-Hur and Spartacus with Kirk Douglas, which you may have been thinking of, RG.
Yeah,
and,
that might be.
Actually, and the Vikings, which had Tony Curtis and I believe also Kirk Douglas as well.
Curtis.
So, yeah. So
yeah,
great period of film.
We'll have to get
an El Cid reboot now with Ren. That's the next project. That'd be awesome. Too cool. So what do you have coming up, Ren, as far as upcoming releases, projects, that kind of fun stuff? What's on the horizon?
Well, I'm working on 4 books. I've got the Shadow Tech Goddess series, which is kind of the same story told in different universes. The same
Shadow Tech as in T-E-C-H, tech, like a technology?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Shadow Tech, that's a staple in all my books. And
I'm just making sure I type it in right in the chat room here. Okay.
And I've got 3 of those books out, and I still have 2 more to do, so I'm working on those. I've been working on those for years. But every so often I get in this state where, like, well, I'm kind of covering, after you've written 14 books, you're like, I'm covering ground that I've already talked about. So I need to go off in a different direction that I've not explored before. And when you're, redoing the same story 4 different times, you're like, oh. So I've had a lot of reversals on these books, but they're coming along nicely. I'm working on a standalone called The Splendor of the Vith. The Vith are a tribe in my books. And The Splendor of the Vith placed thousands of years before the events in the current books. I just started on that one.
Nice.
And I'm also working on another Blanchford book that takes place. There was a, in the House of Bloodstein books, Kay had to sell his soul to a black hat in order to survive his battle with the Jones. And that book that I'm working on now deals with the repercussions of that sale and how it affects his children and everyone around him. That one's getting close. I'm around halfway. I like how that one's progressing.
Nice. Good deal.
The only problem with it, there's no space. It's all on the ground. So I got to get this in space in some way, shape, or form.
Very nice. And the Vith is actually the basis of your handle on Twitter, because your handle on Twitter is Saint Vith, STVITH. So, that's cool.
Yeah, the Vith are just one of many tribes in my books. And I took that from I was reading a history of World War II, and there was a town in France, or it was maybe Belgium, called Saint Vith. And I was like, that sounds kind of cool. I want to use that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. That's fantastic,
man. You also did one of the finding of the cursed gold.
Oh, the cursed gold? Yeah.
That's awesome.
Talking about the gold found, do it as being cursed.
Oh. Where was the cursed gold?
what you were talking about being found earlier.
Yeah, the pirate treasure.
You mean in Texas?
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't. I'm sorry, I haven't come up with anything for that yet. That's going to go in my semi-autographical book in some way, shape, or form. I don't really know. I have to do some research. I don't know what happened to that money. I think most of it went to the state.
I was gonna say, since we're all descended from Texas, you're the rich cousin now.
Heck yeah. I finally got a wealthy relative. Fantastic. Brent, I'll be up to see you tomorrow. I got some projects to pitch.
I think most of that money went to the state. I have to ask my mom. My mom is up on – she's an authority on everything that's happened with our family, so I got to ask her about that. I don't know who got what, but sometimes down there, what you get legally just depends on who you know. You know, it's kind of wild and woolly.
Can confirm.
Well, speaking of wild and woolly, we just had an input from our chat room with alert listener, very astute listener, Clayton Barnett, and on St. Vith, yes, indeed, that happens to be the Battle of St. Vith was one of the initial battles in December 16th, 1944, at the opening of the Battle of the Bulge. The whole thing, yeah. So that St. Vith actually was right at the beginning of all that in the Battle of the Bulge, which a lot of you may know of, and indeed in Belgium. So, yes,
wow.
Pretty profound historical reference there, Mr. Garcia. Excellent job.
I had an old book, and it had all the old army emblems of World War II, the first. I can't remember some other ones, but, you know, the big red one. It had all their patch insignia, and it showed all the battles they participated in, and the one I kept seeing and it kind of gravitated to was St. Vith, and then you'd see St. Lo also. You see a lot of interesting sounding places at these various armies.
Oh, yeah.
Visiting.
My granduncle is a combat engineer in World War II. He actually spent an entire night on the beach in Normandy, but he was in the Battle of the Bulge. And I'm going to have to check with my cousin, his son, who is, actually was just recently through Kentucky and visited me. But I'll have to check with him to see if he was part of that action near St. Vith, because he was definitely in the Bulge. So this gives me something to look into. That's kind of cool. But Clayton says that you get to buy the drinks now. So I guess being the rich relative now.
Again, I think all that money went to Texas. So Texas has got all the cheddar. That's the way it works out.
Oh, man.
See, that's
oh, man.
You would say that. Of course you would say that.
Yeah.
Well, there was another kerfuffle with my family. I had an uncle who was a school teacher, but just by living the life of basically a miser and a hermit, he saved everything he ever earned, and through investments and so forth, had quite a bit of money saved up. You know, in the millions of dollars, and he sort of used that as a club, because a lot of my family are pretty poor down there in Texas, and, you know, he would say, hey, if you don't do what I want, you're not going to get nothing. You know, and okay.
Oh, dear.
On his deathbed, he kind of mentioned, you know, gestured for the people around him to come close, and they all leaned down. And then he said in Spanish, and I'll try not to butcher this, he said, "Después de muerto, nadie busque nadie." And I probably butchered that, but basically it means after I'm gone, nobody gets anything. He didn't have a will. So my family fought over that over that estate for decades.
Wow.
And
so that's where you got the chest of gold doubloons. Nice.
that was a whole different incident, but you know, my family was fighting over it, and there was like different factions fighting over, you know, taking, you know, sides. And then they found out that the lawyers had colluded to suck up all the estate in legal fees.
Oh,
so
wow.
That was a whole other lawsuit. And I think eventually I got like $200.
Oh
hey,
my
that's
God.
That's a lot of macaroni.
Well, yeah. That's...
You can buy a lot of ramen with $200.
That's three and a third bottles of Blanton's bourbon too. So yeah, you can actually get a few bottles with that.
Yeah,
nice.
Basically,
nice. Lunch with beverage, and that's about it. But
yep.
You know, what,
and that makes for a fun weekend right there.
Yeah. So we're going to get to one of the questions that I'm actually very curious about. What is the average writing session day like? Do you actually have a set routine, or is the world of Ren, since, you know, like I said, you know, are we weird enough for you that in that context, is there a weird aspect to your writing rhythm on a given weekday, et cetera? What is your process like?
I usually write at night. That's when my imagination really catches fire. Is in the night, and that's when I'm my most prolific. Now I'm gonna reveal a secret.
Yes, a scoop.
So my family occasionally struggles with diabetes, and on my father's side, everyone had it. My father has it, and then I had it. You know, type 2 diabetes. Not bad, controllable medicine, but my blood sugar was usually in the 200s, mid-200s, sometimes going to 300 before I really caught it, you know, before I figured out what was going on and
mm-hmm.
started taking medicine. With my new weight loss journey, my blood sugar is completely normal. And I wonder if all these 14 years, if I was just on a massive sugar high. You know, all these.
That's possible.
That's a very possibility.
Just coming to me in waves. And, like, I wonder if just being strung out on glucose, if my mind was just in a different place.
That's a new phrase I want to adopt, strung out on glucose. That is fantastic.
Strung out on glucose. I love it.
I love it.
No, I mean, for years and years, things would just flow, you know, at night. It would just, like, just ooze out of me. Now, years later, with my blood sugar completely normal, I have to go, huh, What am I going to do? I could do this, I guess, or I could do that. But it's, I don't know, but every so often I'll just, you know, eat a whole thing of Reese cups and down it with a pop and just wait and see what happens. You know, I don't pass out.
Oh, my.
Well, doesn't Ernest Hemingway have a quote about that? Like, write while you're strung out on glucose and edit when you're after you've taken your insulin or something like that.
Something like that.
You must. It's got to be the case. It has to be.
Yeah.
Ah, that Hemingway.
Yeah. Yeah, like Clayton was saying, yeah. Some use blood sugar, some use alcohol. Write drunk, edit sober. Clayton just posted.
He didn't say drunk on what, you know. I love it.
Oh, God, that's too funny.
I write sober and edit drunk, so.
That's a whole new approach, yeah. I'm sure that my list of people working with me as clients as an editor would shrink if I edited drunk, though. That would not probably go too well. Oh, my God. That is funny. I love it, man. I want to get a T-shirt, strung out in glucose. That's going to be one of my next things I got to look into is getting a custom T-shirt. Strung out in glucose. That is great, man. I love it. Oh, Ren, you're priceless, man. Every show, it's just a gem. But
just laying out the zingers.
Well, I will, for the writers out there that are listening, though, I will ask you a sort of serious question. I'll try to be serious. But it's you did say you're writing roughly four new projects are going on, assuming concurrently. When you do a writing session at night, do you just work on one project, or do you sometimes shift between the two? How do you manage your writing sessions with multiple things going in parallel?
No, I'll have all four of them up, and I'll do a couple paragraphs in one and then move to the other. And then do another paragraph, and I switch back and forth. And you know what is a massive detriment to me? And I don't know if you have the same hang up, but Windows 10 just kills me, because I'll have the stories up and saved. I'll have them up for days, and all of a sudden I'll come back to the PC and it's rebooted due to a Windows update. And that just throws me for a loop. Like, oh, where was I? I have a very old copy of Office. It does not have the ability to go back to where you were. I know the new versions of Word have that, but this is I'm using Word 2003. I think.
Mm-hmm.
So I basically have to figure out where I was, and those reboots happen constantly. Oh my God. And it really does throw a wrench into my process, into my madness. Where was I? I had a thought going and now it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Yeah. Does that bother you at all, Stephen?
As far as which part of it?
Well, if you're working on something and then Windows 10 decides to reboot your PC, and then you have to start over.
Yes, yeah, strictly the tech side. Yes, and I hate that, and it always hits when I have to do something in a timely manner. That's when Windows decides to do its reboot or update is exactly when I need to access a file or a layout or something of that nature. It's just uncanny, and so I've always been a firm believer in Murphy's Law governing the indie author world and indie authors in general, and that is proof of it. Absolutely, it's madness.
Mine rebooted right in the middle of me writing, and when it came back up, everything that I had written was gone.
Oh no!
I hadn't saved any of it, so everything was gone. So I was just like, crap.
Yeah, I mean it's like you have a thought going, and then it's just completely disrupted. And I guess I need to go out and get a more current copy of Word that you can actually go back to where you were. But I don't know. Don't see it happening anytime soon. But
yeah. Oh man. And Clayton was mentioning the workaround. You should keep your PC in airplane mode or disconnected from the net. And I do think that's not necessarily bad, because I was just mentioning that my writing computer, which is not the same, I have two separate computers. I have one solely for writing, and then I have one that I do everything else on, and I keep them separate. And there's definite reason for that, and that's just, it's a mental focus kind of thing. And my writing computer is not online whatsoever. I mean, it's completely offline. And I have found that that does help a lot in terms of, just keeps distractions away. Because, I mean, even when I'm, you know, like I said, I'm working on editing or stuff like that, sometimes you get that notification or this or that, you know, you'll get, you know, okay, I'll check this real quick. And that can lead to rabbit holes. Or like you said, the system deciding it's going to just update you on the spot or this or that. And I think it's a good thing to, hopefully keep that completely separate.
Well, I had that I had a Windows 7 laptop I used to do all my writing on, but the screen on it went kaplooey. The laptop still works, but you have to connect it to a hard monitor, and I usually don't have it connected, so I use my other one. But
yeah,
the travails of writing, you know, the reboot.
Oh, I know. But it's cool that, I find that very interesting because I do multiple projects during the same time periods, but just the way my brain works, I will have only one project in a given writing session. So if I do like two writing sessions in a day, I can work on this project and that project, or I can do a writing session today and then do a writing session tomorrow in the other project. But I think it's just amazing that you actually can have all four up on the grid and actually bounce between them during the same, you know, same night. I think that is awesome, and I applaud you for that, because that's something, I don't think I can do. That is awesome, man. Fantastic.
Well, you have a passing thought and go, okay, let me put this over here. Let me move back to over here. Let me delete this, and let me go over to this story. Okay. Yeah, it's like juggling, but, you're in the groove, so to speak, and you're intimately in tune with what you're doing. So even though there's all these different stories going on, you're just able to keep track of all of them. At least I am. Everyone's process is a little bit different.
Right. Yeah, that's true. It's all individual. But, that's definitely, I think, how you've achieved an exploding head, multiple projects in the same session. That's how you get there. Oh, my God. Great stuff. So RG, what have we not covered so far with Ryan? Because we're coming up on about 12 minutes here, and I want to make sure that we get everything in we can during this episode.
Okay. So for someone not familiar with your body of work, what would you recommend as a good introduction into the world of Ren Garcia?
Well, there's different entry points or different intake points, I guess. Book one is a good place to start, but that deals with the House of Blanchard. And that's like the first five books. And then the 6 through 8 deal with a different group of people. So you can start at book 6.
Oh.
Again, which is known as the Belmont Saga. And that one basically it's the same universe, but a whole different group of characters. There's also been talking about the Bloodstein book, the one with the huge fight scene. The Bloodstein books are, I built those to be standalone. So you can start with those, the House of Bloodstein. Now, an author, when they say this is standalone, you shouldn't have any trouble. That's not necessarily the case for the uninitiated. I'd written book 2, The Hazards of the Old Ones, and I thought this is a standalone book. You don't need book 1, but all the feedback I got was you really do need, you got to have book 1 because the characters really don't make any sense necessarily, or just really no attachment to the characters unless you've read the first book, which was a shock. I'm like, well, I didn't realize that. I'm sorry. That, I guess, is the reality. So, when people have read book 1 and then read book 2, they like book 2 a lot. If they've just read book 2 without book 1, they're a little confused.
Okay.
So, but you can do the Bloodstein book.
And that's Blood Fiend?
Yeah, the Blood Fiend, yeah, the House of Blood Fiend. There's two of them. And then the Shadow Tech Goddess books, you probably should, those you really can't, well, you can read them, but if you've read the Belmont Saga first, that helps out a lot. So there's several different access points. I think the best one is either book one or book six.
Okay. So everything is very straightforward and well well documented.
The book one's had a lot of different names. It started off as Sigillus of Metatron, then became the League of Elder, then became the League of Elder, Sigillus of Metatron. There's been like four or five different titles of that book, but that is the original.
Okay. Well, that's
very
cool.
Yep, and League of Elder, Sigillus of Metatron, is indeed available for free on Kindle right now, and I just posted the link in the chat room, and it has a definitely the cover is awesome, and you see this a big seal on the cover, as we mentioned seals earlier, but it's awesome. So we do, but it's free on Kindle, folks. Paperback is only $14.99, and actually hardcover version on Prime is $33.95. But yes, the Kindle version free at the moment, and I did post a link in the chat room, so all you in the chat room, try to pick that one up while you can, get underway on Ren's series. Good stuff.
Very cool.
Before Amazon realizes what happened and makes it 99 cents again. Or unless they just price match somewhere that I'm not aware of, but
yeah.
I don't know, man. 99 cents.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like what,
no
four packages of ramen? I mean,
And since Ren is a humble guy, folks. He's down to earth, very approachable. Like I said, he won me over like instantly when I first met him. But he won't mention this, but I will say, he has an academic background, folks. A degree in literature from Ohio State University. So yeah, he's got that in the mix as well. So just thought I would throw that out there. And hold on. Oh my God! Oh, he's. Wait, Bren. Clayton has emailed his broker to get 10 of the $900 books. He's going to sell them for 100 times the value, and buy gold that he is going to bury in South Texas. That's Clayton wanted to pass that along to you.
Well, if you bury it in South Texas, no doubt one of my cousins will unearth it before too long. So.
That is definitely the post of the night in the chat room. You win the chat room tonight, Clayton. That is priceless.
There has to be some time travel involved in there somewhere.
Oh,
Clayton would probably know how to figure that out. Yeah, he's got that kind of quirky mind. He'd probably figure that out. So, hi.
Well, I was asking my mom about that treasure chest. I said, Mom, when they took the treasure chest and put it in the county jail so no one could steal it, didn't the Wailing Woman start showing up? Now, she's a big fixture in Latin folklore, you know, the Wailing Woman, La Llorona. And she comes in a lot of different forms, but I had heard that she started showing up as soon as the gold got taken out of the ground. And I said, Mom, is that what happened? And she's like, no. Where did you hear that? I'm like, well, I don't know. Maybe I made it up. I don't know. I thought I'd heard that, but no, she says no. The actual story is pretty mundane, but we stick with the jazzed up one.
Nice. And we're coming up on about, I'm just checking the time here. We have about 5 minutes to go in the show, so I want to be sure we give you plenty of time to say where to find you online and social media, websites, et cetera. Where do you want people to connect with you with, or connect with you at, I should say?
Well, I have my blog. It's the Temple of the Exploding Head, all one word, .com. I also have my Facebook. It's the League of Elder by Ren Garcia. And that's where I spend most of my time interfacing with readers and so forth. One of those two places, you can get a hold of me if you need to.
Yes, want to and need. Yes. And certainly. And yeah, because I know I also follow you on Twitter and Instagram. I know you do have presences at both. But yes, definitely catch up with them at the blog and Facebook, because those are primary sources for all things Ren Garcia. And so coming up on 4 minutes left, what would you like to address that we may not have covered that you were just dying to illuminate us about?
Well, I don't do too much on Twitter because I got yelled at by someone on Twitter for promoting smoking a few years
what?
Ago.
I did not know that.
There's a lot of smoking in my books, and smoking, if you go to a ball, it's called taking the coal. If someone is interested in talking to someone else, they'll walk up and offer them a cigarette, and if they take it and start smoking it, they're obliged to have jovial conversation with that person until the cigarette is done. So
that's quite a bit of smoking. Classic 90s pickup move. That's not anything too scandalous.
Oh, no, but I got busted for it. Somebody's like, you're promoting cancer and smoking, and you should be ashamed.
God.
This is how people, that's how Generation
Ridiculous.
X people flirt with each other. That's normal.
Yeah, it's normal stuff. It's nothing outrageous. But still.
They would hang my Instagram, man.
So yeah, so Twitter is scary. So I don't do too much on Twitter.
Yeah.
But
well, even if you didn't have that, someone's gonna yell at you on Twitter regardless.
Yeah, Twitter is almost like made for yelling. Yeah, you're gonna get troll. It's troll infested, no question. You can just say
really
the nicest, kindest thing.
Caps lock
yeah.
button.
That's so true.
There's no way to win. I just post pictures of clouds and trees. And.
Yep, that's right.
Well, Stephen,
yeah,
it was great fun talking to you and everybody.
God, I loved it. Yes, sir. It's fantastic, man. I just, yeah, it's a, I know that our listeners, yeah, I just love hearing from you, and we definitely want to hear from you. Sooner than later. So yeah, we definitely won't be that long before we have you on again. Certainly finish up those new projects so we can definitely be able to promote those for you, because we love all your work, and thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Oh, it's great fun. I'm going to go pump up on some glucose and strike ahead.
Strung up on glucose. You got it. And on that note, I'll say my sign off. Ren, you can say goodbye one more time. And then RG and Daniel take us out. This is Stephen Zimmer on the Star Chamber Show. And next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern, we are going to have another great creative guest, though they may not be as weird as Ren Garcia, but we will have another one next Wednesday. Thank you for joining us tonight. And over to you, Ren, and then RG, Daniel, take us out.
Thanks, everyone. Have a good night and stay safe out there.
And as always, it's great to hang out with everyone. Thank you so much for joining us. Check me out on rgwesterman.com. I'll see you next time.
And as always, if you are looking for the best in finding out about new creatives and what they're doing in their lives and how you can increase yours, check out next week at the Star Chamber Show. This is Daniel Dark signing off.